Hi, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager. This is my home, my office, my dog. I don't even have to introduce him anymore. Everybody knows he's Otto. Otto knows that when the camera arrives, he goes into position. It's a very funny thing to see, actually. We should try to actually video Otto getting into position one time. It's very funny. Anyway, welcome. This is my fireside chat, and it's a chance for me to just talk to you completely spontaneously. It's not scripted. There's no teleprompter. It's a chance for you to know me better, and ultimately through your questions, for me to know you better as well, but obviously for you to know me as a person, and not just as person offering ideas. Obviously, I offer ideas, but it's very real. I love real, and that's what this is about. So I'm going to talk to you about something happening at this very moment. Normally, I don't address immediate issues because I want every one of the fireside chats to be important 5 years from now, 10 years from now. That's actually something that is important to me. These things, I want to have a life of their own. By the way, in this instance, it should have a life of its own because I'm going to talk to you philosophically about an issue that's happening at this moment, specifically COVID-19, and that is the coronavirus. So there's a massive amount of panic going on. I'll talk about America right now because I want to address specific countries that have been more affected than the United States, but the United States has been affected. About 30 people, they say, have died from the coronavirus. And I don't agree, for example, about closing down schools, universities, all public events. I don't support that as it happens. I think kids should continue to go to school. By the way, the irony is the younger you are, the less likely you are to be affected by the coronavirus. At least in America and I assume anywhere, it is very rare, if even existent, that kids are dying from the illness, and in most cases even contracting it in any serious or measurable way. But nevertheless, the latest is Harvard has canceled classes for the time being. Otto is very lively because there was a delay, and he who knows? Otto, what do you think? The answer to the question to a dog, what do you think, is generally, and I know some of you will find this offensive, but there's nothing to be offended. And the answer is not much. And that's the beauty that, you know, they're not troubled by things as much as we are. Anyway, back to the issue. So why don't I agree with the school closings, for example? Why aren't I panicked over this? As so many are, and as the media are, and others are. And the answer is, it's philosophical. That's why I talk about a philosophy of life so much every time I talk. It's really about a philosophy of life. My philosophy of life in this regard... Oh, interesting. He may not want to know my philosophy of life. I don't know how he's reacting. Be that as it may, my philosophy of life, and I have many philosophies of life, but one is to always use reason. Reason is a gift, if you will, of nature. I don't think nature makes reason. I think it's a gift of God, but that's not my issue for right now. But it is a gift, and we should use it. That's why I don't like panic. I have said on my radio show for years, I fly constantly. I fly every week of the year, it averages out at least. And I have on rare occasion thought, what if the plane went down? It's obvious, everybody thinks about that. And my first thought is always, I fear people screaming more than I fear the people, the plane going down. I really hate panic. I hate the irrational or the anti-rational. There's a tremendous amount of non-rationality here. Let me give you an example. As of this moment, this could change and I can end up wrong on this issue. I fully acknowledge that. However, as of this moment, 30 Americans have died of the coronavirus. Maybe by the time you see this, in a day or two, or next week, whenever you watch it, it may be more than that, but it's 30. Now, do you know the number of Americans that have died this season? And it's not over the flu season. This season from the flu. According to the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control in the United States, 34,000, approximately 34,000 Americans have died of the flu. Last year, over 50,000 Americans, according to the CDC, died of the flu. Why was there no panic over that? I don't think you have a very good answer to that question. I don't think anybody does. That's a lot of people, right? And hundreds and hundreds of thousands were infected by it. Millions, in fact, millions. Tens of millions were affected by the flu. So why wasn't the media giving us numbers about dead from the flu this year and last year and the year before? I've never gotten a coherent answer. Why are we getting numbers on the coronavirus but not numbers on the flu when the numbers are so much greater? You'll say, because this could lead to something far greater than the flu. But that's what I heard in the past about SARS and about the swine flu and about other outbursts of viruses that have taken place. But none of them led to anything catastrophic. Obviously, every human that dies prematurely is a tragedy. But that's true for car crashes, and that's true for cancer, and that's true for murder, and that is true for all premature death. So why all of this about this? I don't know the answer. I just don't know. 30 people? I mean, how many people have died this year in the United States from snake bites? I don't know. I should have looked it up before talking to you. But there is certainly a number. So I'm somewhat baffled. Boy, he is definitely a live wire today. I think he wants to get in the best position for the camera, which I admire about him. I think that's a good thing. But I don't want his fame to go to his head. So why all of this about this and closing colleges? When I think about past generations of Americans, this was supposedly the land of the free and the home of the brave. That's in the American National Anthem. But we're not as free as we used to be, and we're certainly not as brave as we used to be. Maybe that's part of the reason. Maybe people are so used to the idea that life is guaranteed, that any slight deviation from the norm is panic-inducing. I gave a speech yesterday. Everybody showed up. I showed up, obviously. Everybody showed up. I shook hands with at least 40 people. And I hugged probably 20 people, strangers, just yesterday. And what is my philosophy of life? My philosophy of life is A, be rational, and B, that playing it safe can injure your ability to love and enjoy life. Let me give you another example. This will, I think, really hit home. I have been taking people to Israel on trips. The last one, I took 600 of my listeners from around the United States to Israel. And I have been traveling to Israel and taking people to Israel for many years. And people will call my show and they will say, Dennis, I so really want to visit Israel, the holy places, and so on. But Dennis, I'm not going to go until I'm sure that it's safe to go. Well, it's been safe to go my whole life. And my whole life I have been visiting Israel. Has it been completely safe? What does that even mean, completely safe? What is completely safe? Crossing the street is not completely safe. Clearly, driving is not completely safe. There's no such thing. So these people who are dying to visit Israel and have not done so, they have allowed fears to stop them from living life fully. I don't. I never have. I want to live life fully. I don't take ridiculous risks. I wear seatbelts whenever I drive. Not wearing a seatbelt is much more dangerous at this point, certainly, than the coronavirus. I wear seatbelts. I would not take a motorcycle over the Grand Canyon like some people do. I don't believe in going to danger for danger's sake. I wouldn't. I can't. But it's not my thing to climb mountains. But if I did, I'm not sure I would climb Everest. The rate of death in Everest climbing is very high. So there are risks that I don't believe people should take, because it's just risk for the sake, sometimes for the sake of risk, sometimes for the sake of ego or thrill. And I admire people who could do that. It's very hard to climb a mountain, especially Everest. I understand that. But there are risks that are so minuscule compared to the benefit, like a visit to Israel, like going to class. I mean, I think people should go to class. I think people should go to meetings. People should live life normally. Yes, wash your hands more often. That's fine. I'll give you another example. My trusty cigar. Okay. So I always get some letters. I can't believe it, Dennis. You know, you smoke cigars. The risk in cigar smoking is so minuscule because it is not a cigarette. You don't inhale a cigar. It is done for taste, not for nicotine. So I have enjoyed this since I was 16 years of age. It's just one of the delights of my life. And in other words, the ratio of the joy versus the risk is so gigantic that I opt for the joy. Now, that may not be true with alcohol, although I don't drink alcohol, but it's only because I don't like it. But I don't have a problem with people who can do it in moderation and it doesn't affect them. But there's certainly a risk there, given, I mean, the number of people who become addicted to it is very high in sheer numbers, as you know. And they shouldn't, obviously, they shouldn't be smoking. Here's an irony. I am completely opposed to marijuana smoking. So people tell me, oh, no, there's nothing wrong. You know, it's marijuana is great and so on. And it's just a relaxant and so on. And so people who will be okay with something that, no question in my mind, plays with young people's brains. That's the reason, by the way, I never took drugs when I was a kid. I knew God gave me a good brain and I wasn't going to tamper with it. So there's an example of the thrill of marijuana or the joy of marijuana versus the risk of marijuana of tampering with my mood and my brain. It wasn't worth it. Everybody has to make these decisions. That's fine. But I have made my decision to live life. I love life. I live it. I experience it. I have traveled around the world. I've gone to places that are far riskier than Israel. There are places, however, that I wouldn't go, that the risk is too great. I acknowledge it. I wouldn't visit Iran. As a well-known American Jew, it is a pretty stupid idea for me to visit Iran. Okay? I acknowledge that. It's not a good idea for Iranian Americans or Iranian Belgians or Iranian Frenchmen to visit Iran. You never know which of you they will simply kidnap. But I am a big believer in living life fully and not playing it safe all the time. That's it. I don't want to court unnecessary danger, but I don't want to just play it safe. You will lose out in experiencing life. I feel that about everything. I was divorced and I got remarried, and I know the pain of divorce. And yet, it is worth getting into a good marriage, even though you know the pain of a troubled marriage. People who tell me, "Oh, I don't want to get married," but you know, my parents were divorced. So I'd say to them, "I don't know if your parents were in a car crash, would you stop driving?" These attitudes don't make sense to me. Live life fully. You take a risk if you get married. You take a risk if you have children. That is correct. But you take a bigger risk not getting married and not having children that you will not have lived a full life. You should try to get married and you should try to have children. That is a fuller life. Ask anyone who has done it and they will tell you it's a fuller life. But you court danger. You have children, there's risk. There's risk that they will get sick. There's risk that they will die. There is risk that they will be alienated from you. There's risk that they will be troubled. There is a lot of risks in having a child. But I don't want to play it safe and not have children. So that's my attitude on the coronavirus. 30,000 thus far this year dead in America from the flu, and all the statistics are telling me, oh, we're up to 30. 12 were in Washington State alone in one nursing home. The people who are dying, it's not a killer. It kills some, but it's not a killer. If you have a pre-existing condition and or you're very old, yes. It's probably a problem. It is a problem for many people in those categories getting the coronavirus. That is true. But in those conditions, very, very old people fall and then they break their hip, and that leads to complications and a downhill trend in their life. What are they supposed to do? Not walk? So this is my philosophy of life, and I never get spooked by the media. The media, as a rule, stink. The day you know that is a very liberating day. Okie dokie, let's move on here to your questions. Okay, now, all right, we go to, the first is always a video question, and here we go. Take it away.
Hey Dennis, my name is Andronic. I am 20 years old and I'm from Valley Village. And my question to you is, considering that how religion is a very dying topic right now, but I still consider myself very spiritual and very religious. Do you have any personal opinion or view on penance, whereas you punish yourself for the sins that you have done? Thank you, and I love what you do.
Well, thank you, Andronic. I love what I do too. Am I allowed to say that? Of course I love what I do. Why would I do it? Well, I do it for idealistic reasons and because I love it. Anyway, so penance in the sense of being regretful and trying to undo the sins or the bad things that you have done is a very noble thing. Every noble thing, by the way, can be carried to an extreme. It was interesting that you used the term punish yourself. I would need to know exactly what that means when you say punish yourself. The task in life is not to punish yourself. The task in life is to change yourself, not punish yourself. If you have done something wrong, and by wrong, by the way, I define it as wrong against another human being. So the first thing you have to do is do the right thing with that human being. Apologize for exactly what you did, not just say, I'm sorry if I hurt you. It doesn't mean anything, because it means you don't believe you hurt them. That's what it means. I'll give you an example. I think I mentioned this on this. A vice provost of diversity and inclusion at Purdue University wrote a despicable lie about me in the Exponent, the Purdue newspaper. A month ago or so, he wrote that he attended my speech at Purdue last year, and I said that slavery was not a bad thing. Now, that is as pure a lie as can exist. It's sometimes lies have a kernel of truth, but this doesn't even have a kernel of truth. For as I wrote to this man after he got a lot of feedback from my listeners, I wrote to him, he wrote to me, well, that's what he thought he heard and so on. It was a namby-pamby, nothing letter. I wrote back, among other things, I wrote, do you know anybody who doesn't think slavery was a bad thing? Have you ever heard anyone actually say it? How do you make up something so absurd? That would be like my saying, I don't think murder is a bad thing. Slavery is pure evil. Who would say it's not a bad thing? So he made it up. Now, he is still not. He wrote me then another letter because the president of Purdue has been getting so many letters from people, including Purdue graduates. What gives here? How does one of your officials make up this lie about this man Prager? And so he wrote me a letter. Well, I guess I misunderstood, and the letter was a joke. He said it publicly, but he only wrote me privately. To do penance, to get back to your question, you have to do the right thing. If I lie about you publicly, I must retract the lie publicly. Right? Right. So people don't know how to be penitent. That's the irony. You undo the damage to the extent that you can that you did, and you apologize to the person that you've hurt. Okay, Joe 17, Omaha, Nebraska, USA. Dear Otto and his owner. That's correct. My teacher told our class a few months ago that it is impossible for black people to be racist because they are a minority in America. How would you respond to this? Thanks for your time. You will find this interesting, Joe. I was told the same thing when I was in college. I was told this in the 70s, in the 1970s. A black can't be racist. And I remember thinking, am I in the Twilight Zone? A black cannot be a racist? So what does that even mean? So if a white hates blacks because they're black, he's a racist. But if a black hates whites because they're white, he's not a racist. Or hates Hispanic because they're Hispanic, not a racist. This is the left's contempt for blacks. They are not held to the same moral standards that whites are. That's all it is. It's pure left-wing contempt for blacks. End of issue. By the way, I know that notion. Oh, well, it's only where there's power. What does that have to do with anything? A bunch of Jews keep getting beaten up by blacks in Brooklyn. And it's very underreported, but you could look it up and tell me, are they anti-Semitic? Are these blacks doing this, picking out identifiably Jewish people in Brooklyn and beating them and screaming curses at them? Is that anti-Semitic, or can a black not be an anti-Semite either? The power thing is absurd. And if they really believe it, then a black can be racist in Africa, but a white can't. Because whites don't have power in Africa, blacks do. But isn't that stupid? Yes, it's stupid. Everything from the left is stupid. Everything. I find this incredible to say, but it is true. Not from liberals. This is a left-wing idea. Liberals don't fight the left. They should, because their allies are conservatives, not leftists. But that's a separate issue, too. And I've given a whole PragerU video on the difference between left and liberal. That got him excited, I got to say. You never know what Otto will react to. But he hears my passion. I think that's it. Definitely. All's good. All's good, Otto. Life is good. Yes. Okay, good boy. All right. Chloe, 15, Charlottetown, Rhode Island. In your opinion, what is the most dysfunctional family in the Bible? P.S. Give Otto a rub for me. I just gave him a rub. So... most dysfunctional family in the Bible. Here is what I note in my Bible commentary, the Rational Bible. Why is he so excited? He very rarely does that. I think it's Megan. Just between you and me, he has a thing for Megan. Anyway, all right, little fella. All's good. All is good. The beauty, I write this in my commentary on Genesis. Every family in Genesis, a series of stories about families, among other things, Every family in Genesis is dysfunctional, starting with the first one, right? Adam and Eve, they have Cain and Abel. Cain kills Abel. That's pretty dysfunctional when one son kills another son, right? And then it continues all the way to Joseph and his brothers. His brothers throw Joseph in a pit and then sell him as a slave. They hated him. Jacob and Esau hated each other from the womb. I mean, it's just endless. And you know why? Because the Bible is a source of wisdom. Unfortunately, the dysfunctional family is a fairly normal family. Some families are not dysfunctional, and they're lucky, but many are. So nobody gets the award for most dysfunctional family in the Bible, in my opinion. All right, here we go. Now, what's our time factor here?
26.
Oh, really? Wow. Francis, 23, Leland, North Carolina. Hi, Dennis. The first time I heard you was about 30 years ago. Your show was when you were one of the hosts on WABC in New York. Yes, that's right. You had a running question all week that was premised something as follows. For a man to be a good person, he has to control his sexual urges. What does it take for a woman to be a good person? You kept saying that you would give your answer on Friday's show. Well, I missed that Friday show. He's been waiting 30 years. And I'm still wondering what your answer is. You should be listening to my show at Pragertopia. You get every show without commercials, pragertopia.com. Any of you anywhere in the world, listen to my three-hour show each day and half the time because there are no commercials, pragertopia.com. Anyway, I've talked about this. I love the podcast and Prager. You keep it up. Indeed, I am. Yes, this is a very important issue. Everybody knows what their sons have to control. What do your daughters have to control? And the theory in today's feminist age is nothing. Girls are terrific. Well, girls are not terrific, and boys are not terrific. Boys can become terrific. Girls can become terrific. Girls have to control their emotions. Boys have to control their violence and their predatory sexual nature. That's what you have to teach your daughter, just as you have to teach your boys. Otherwise, by the way, she won't be a good person, and she'll never be a happy person. All right, I think, should we take another one? What do you say? Okay, very good. Michael, 59, Weir, Texas. Hello, Dennis. I have recently discovered the enjoyment of listening to your fireside chats. Thank you. Please tell Otto howdy. Howdy. I was wondering your thoughts on the ever-increasing influence of celebrities on politics. Whoa. That's a new one, too. That is like a first. Was that a sneeze? Is he getting the coronavirus? You know, sneezes are a big thing. I hope you're not affected, guys. I hope you don't leave depressed. Anyway, the ever-increasing influence of celebrities on politics. Because fame has rendered people important. In the past, actors and actresses were just as famous and just as much celebrities as in the present time. Movie stars, as they're called. Movie stars goes back to the beginning of movies. But people did not confuse fame with importance. That's today they do. There are people who are famous for being famous. They're not even stars. They're just famous. That's why so many kids in America want to be famous. And I ask them, what do you want to be famous for? I don't care. I say, well, what if you want to be famous for the most hamburgers eaten in an hour? Fine. Fame has become an end in itself, which is tragic, because it doesn't mean anything if you're a famous actor, except that you're a famous actor. That's all it means. That's one reason. There's another reason for the influence of actors, is because in the past, actors didn't think that they had critically important insights into life. They knew that they could use their fame to visit hospitals, to raise funds for charities. They would be whole evenings of charity raising for kids with diseases done by actors and actresses. Now they use their fame because they have self-deluded into thinking they are important thinkers. so that Robert De Niro will get up at the Academy Awards and curse the President of the United States using the F word. Why does he do that? Because he thinks he's important. And he thinks that his insight, his hatred of the president, is so significant that it is worth expressing to the world, like we care what he thinks. That's the problem. They think they're more important than they are. It is a beautiful thing to be a great actor or actress, but it is not a beautiful thing to think that because you are a famous actor or actress or baseball player or whatever it might be, that therefore you have something truly significant to say to the world. You're entitled to say it, but we're entitled to say it's insignificant. All right, want to remind you that this month is fundraising month for PragerU. We need your help to keep everything we do free. We are a force for goodness in this world. That's the whole purpose of this PragerU project. So help us out. Go to PragerU.com and make a donation. About half of all of our money comes from donations through the internet. Or call 833-PragerU if you're in the United States. Or go to DennisPrager.com and click on the banner. There's a lot of ways that you can get through. And I thank you in advance. It's really important that whatever you can give, even if it's a small amount, it is very, very meaningful to us. So thanks very much. I'm Dennis Prager, and I'll see you next week. Thank you for watching. If you'd like to keep these fireside chats free, please do by donating to PragerU.